Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
And now,
it's time for
Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast.
All right.
It's us again.
Hi.
You're stuck with us.
Yeah. Same hosts. same podcast. Different guests every week. That is our one big promise.
Yes.
I think other...
So far, we've maintained it.
Yeah. Some podcasts have the same guest like 50 weeks in a row. And not us.
No.
And we have a great guest
Who is
today.
Us?
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Oh, it doesn't...
I'm Jesse Gaskell.
I guess I'm Mike Sweeney. And we're writers in Conan.
We are.
And we host this podcast.
It's called Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast.
Right.
Just to remind you what you're listening to in case you accidentally clicked on the wrong thing.
Right. You know, half serious, half ironic title. And we like to talk about, you know, behind the scenes of Conan. And things go off from there. And we have a lot of great guests, including, very excited about today's guest.
He's here. He's listening to
me. He is.
I'm beaming.
I'm trying to make him blush. An old friend and a very talented and very funny man, Mr. Jonathan Groff, is here today. And he was...
We should clarify, it's not Jonathan Groff, the Broadway actor.
Right.
I got stories about that.
Who's on Glee? I bet you do.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm double sure. booking?
Yes. I once got... I believe it was an agent... I think William Morris, who was adamant that they were in New York and they were a WME and they were adamant that I needed to be downtown. I was in my office in Burbank or something. And like, you are supposed to be downtown at Circle in the Square in 25 minutes.
Oh my God.
You are late for Glee.
Was part of you, were you stressed out to hear that? Were you like, oh man, I forgot I'm supposed to be downtown?
Well, I was stressed out for him. I know somebody with my name. Right. I was late. So
did part of you say?
Late by proxy.
I'm going to go down there and knock their socks off, and I'm going to be the Jonathan Groff who now gets all these Broadway
musical parts. I'm going to play King George.
Musical parts.
So the first time, I'll give you the best of my Jonathan Groff.
I'm dying to hear it. Can I say one thing?
Yes.
Yeah, I just want to introduce you.
Oh,
the fact that you were started out as a writer on Late Night, okay. And you were the head writer on Late Night during very heady times from 95 to 2000, and... It's great to have you here and to reminisce.
Those are seminal years for the show.
Very seminal years. But now, getting back to the fact you're
yeah. Tell us more Groff mix-ups.
So I first started hearing about it. My manager like had a Google alert on my name. I don't know why he would do that, but he did years ago. And then he said, you know, there's this guy doing like theater around Boston named Jonathan Groff. And I was like, really? And like,
This is before he was even on Broadway, like in Spring Awakens.
I think he was doing like rep theater or something. And he was young.
Yeah.
And of course, I tried the like, well, I'm already in SAG.
Right.
Yeah,
so he's going to have to be Jonathan Q. Groff.
Right.
That rule doesn't exist anymore.
The way David
Michael
Bowie.
J. Fox could have been Michael Fox.
Right.
Now he would be Michael Fox.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Take a number, pal.
Yeah. How would that have affected history?
I know. It would be so different. Wouldn't be the same. He needed that extra syllable. So then the next time I heard of my assistant, Allison Floral, who used to work at Conan O'Brien, who's lovely, she had me on some kind of a Google alert thing too, and she found a review of a play. Actually, it was Spring Awakening, which was his big breakthrough play on Broadway. And it was a reviewer who was enthusiastic about what he was seeing in terms of Jonathan's physical being.
Mm-hmm. Are we talking private parts?
He was very excited. Jonathan, he says something like, the hit of the play for me was young Jonathan Groff, who revealed a pair of spank-worthy buttocks in the third row, or in the middle of the second act. And
are you allowed to write things like that? That
sounds
like
a— it was a blog.
It's the Times.
He said, it caused this reviewer to cream his jeans.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, of course, Allie Floral, thought that was hilarious.
Right.
Cream my jeans and my name were in the same sentence.
Yeah.
And then
it's not the first time either.
No. It's something you're used to.
Another thing that happened was—
I saw Spring Awakening.
Yes.
I don't remember—
any jeans creaming?
I did cream in my jeans, but I don't remember those buttocks. That's me at Broadway.
Spank-worthy buttocks.
Wow. I think you had to be looking for them.
Yeah.
It sounds like that reviewer was—
I went because I thought you were starring in the show.
Yeah.
So well, go ahead. What were you going to say?
My dad, whenever his Jonathan Groff's name would appear in the New York Times, would call me and be like, that Jonathan Groff's name was in the New York Times again, like kind of bitter.
What are we going to do about it?
Got to take him down.
He's kind of bitter for me.
What's our plan?
The other one, there's so many, there are a few good ones. Another one I liked is I got a really nice signed letter from, I think, Anna Wintour.
Oh,
wow.
hand-delivered to my house in Los Angeles. That invited me and a guest at the Costume Institute.
Oh my God.
That's Mike, you know my wife.
Wow. And she was like, you have to go.
I love my wife. She was so super, like, she so believes in me, I think, on some level.
Right.
Or pretends
yes.
to.
No, she does.
That she was like, well, of course it's you. Right. No, you're a prominent, you're a successful television writer and producer. Of course Anna Wintour wants you to sit with her at her table at the Costume Institute gala. Can we go? And I'm like, honey, I think it's the other Jonathan Groff.
And then your dad called. That son of a bitch. The other one got invited. I'd love to see what you'd wear to the costume.
I know. I wish you would have got—
ball.
Was that the Met Gala? I mean,
yeah,
that's what that is.
Oh,
it's the giant.
That's a huge.
The biggest.
I think it's the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Met Gala benefits the Costume Institute.
Yeah. But it's right. like, it's a real who's who of.
It's huge. Yes.
Of don't the fashion dumb. World. Yeah.
You used to count down the date every year to me.
I did.
Costume Ball's coming.
And then one time I was flying back from New York.
Yes.
And Lea Michele was on my flight. It was a late flight coming back from the upfront, the television presentation things.
Right.
And she was on my flight. And she got down to baggage claim before me. And when I got there, there was a car had been sent for me. I think Sony Studios or somebody. I was there. I was in New York for some show. And they had sent a car. And that was very nice. And the limo driver had a sign that said Jonathan Groff. Uh-huh. And she was arguing with the limo driver, trying to send him away, saying, well, he's like my best friend and he's not coming to LA for another 2 weeks. So I've gotten some bad information.
Oh, man.
What a lame name dropping. excuse me. But
But that's also funny that she was like, well, I'll clear this up.
Yes.
I'm going to take this into my own hands.
And then I'll let Jonathan know I scored.
Yeah.
Try to score points with it.
I finally met him. He's lovely.
I was just going to ask if you met him.
Oh, good.
I got to go to Hamilton, like one of his last weeks in it.
Uh-huh.
Got to go on stage, which was nice. Somebody else had arranged that. And he could not have been nicer.
Oh, I'm sure.
Wow.
Yeah, he's lovely.
Were you like, so do you get mixed up for me all the time? And he said no.
His dad.
He doesn't need that. He gently, yes, he to be nice, he said, yes, it happens all the time, but I don't know if it really happens.
He's like, the only thing that was confusing was
his co-star in Hamilton, David Diggs, who was watching Black-ish, and saw Jonathan's name and was confused. And that was all he gave me.
Yeah.
And then that was about it. He did not have a similar, like, Lea Michele sending away your car.
Yeah.
Because you work on Black-ish. You're a showrunner on Black-ish.
I was at the time, yeah.
Yes, yes. So.
Yeah, I did that.
That's how he saw the name.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a big credit. That one, they really linger on that one. You know, that's not one of the credits that just flies by.
Right. It was a good show. That was a nice experience. That has been a nice experience. I'm still there a little bit. I'm actually helping out on Mixed-ish this year.
The spinoff. Cool. That's great.
I'm there a couple days a week helping them.
Okay.
Which is the Kenya Barris.
Right.
Extending the Kenya Barris brand.
Is it a
It's a prequel.
It
follows Tracy Ellis Ross's character, Rainbow, from when she was 12.
Oh.
So we invented a very strange backstory for her character that is sort of influenced by real life events in Kenya's life in terms of who his wife was, but she grew up on a commune, the character, and So they leave a commune during a, whatever it is, a DEA raid or ATF raid. And they start a new life. And we're picking that up in 1985 when she's 12 years old.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Gary Cole, Mark Paul Gosselaar, Tika Sumpter.
Wow. Uh-huh.
Will there be a crossover since it's in the 80s with the Goldbergs? I just assume.
Are they
that
in the same
like
universe?
Seems like ABC synergy to me.
I assume. I only assume.
So you two started at Conan on the same day?
Yes.
Is
yes.
that right?
January
30th?
Sounds right.
1995.
Yes.
Yes, it was a while
And
ago.
What were your first impressions of each other?
Oh, we knew each other.
Oh, you did?
Well. Yeah,
oh, okay.
We had done stand-up for years together.
Yes. I met you in Boston. I went up there to do some Nick's gigs, and I met you, and we went to hung out in Chinatown.
That's right. And I'd been in New York and seen you. You were a very good, in addition to being a funny comic, a very everybody's favorite host at like shows, so you were good. Kept the shows moving and
I remember
the crowd. So I remember seeing you at Catch Rising Star, the old Catch Rising Star on First Avenue.
I got everyone's credits correct. And you were very funny. We did some gigs together.
We did some gigs together. I remember meeting you in like Northampton once. Like I was doing a college and you were doing a club or something.
Oh, yeah.
Massachusetts.
Yes. I was doing a club. But the show I was doing it was the best thing ever. No one, it was like a show at this rock club. They were trying comedy and no one showed up. So they paid us and we didn't have to do a show.
Oh,
like,
that's
this is
the
great.
Best.
I didn't mind driving 4 hours there.
It's the best.
It is the best.
Yeah. And then we actually were writing together, sort of near each other.
Near each other at Comedy Central.
At Comedy Central. I was writing for Mark Maron on a show called Short Attention Span Theater that he was the host of. Mm-hmm. It was like a clip show. And you were writing.
For Laura Keitlinger.
Yeah.
She had a show. Called Stand Up. So it was all the little intros and the interstitial things. And then we both got hired the same day.
We were that's
hearing
incredible.
Like, we were hearing there was going to be openings because we heard that Louis C.K. was moving on and maybe Dino or somebody else. So we were really pretty good friends and like both did submissions separately. And then I think
thought you were competing for the same spot.
A little bit, but I remember I think you got the call first or I got the call first. I think whatever it was.
Oh, yeah, you got the call first.
And we both were like, hey, I got some news. I got some news. And we're super relieved that we were and excited that we got to start this job together.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then the first.
That's cool. So you already had a friend coming into work.
Have to say that made a giant difference for me. Just. Because I'm in my head all the time anyway, freaking out. I freaked out anyway, but it calmed me down.
We knew Ned
being able to talk to you
as a writer.
I didn't know Ned before.
You didn't know? I didn't know. From Boston Stand-up.
He was very funny writer on the show.
Brian Kiley was already a writer there.
Yes.
So we knew people.
Yeah. You knew those guys. They were Boston comics, so you knew them better.
Yeah.
I knew him to say hi to, but you knew him well. Yeah. And
And Conan was okay hiring Boston comics? I'm serious.
Oh, I thought you were being facetious. No, he was fine with it, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. He was, he always had, it felt like he had some strange rules, but then later on, I think he was mad that he was accused of having rules that he didn't have.
About hiring?
About hiring.
Oh.
Like
what?
Well, he had a blanket thing where like everybody assumed that everybody who worked at late night as a writer had gone to Harvard because Conan was a Harvard dude. Mm-hmm. And there was like Michael Gordon was kind of an outlier. There had been some people who were like bright, you know, writing in that late.
Could have gotten into Harvard, probably. If we'd applied.
Yeah.
If I decided to go to college.
But then years later, he did a thing at like the Harvard Lampoon, like some meeting or reunion thing. And they were like, why do you hate Harvard writers? And he's like, I actually don't hate them.
Right.
So.
But he was, that was the thing that people bring up all the time. Like, oh, you're all Harvard grads. Mm-hmm. And some of the writers on Conan didn't even. No one cared where you went to school.
Right.
Up. It's so nice.
Yes.
No one's ever asked, you know, if you graduated, what your GPA was.
No, none of that. And I don't think people think, oh, yeah. It's like, yeah, no one cares.
I think Conan.
Your undergraduate degree.
I think Conan and Robert Smigel were not like snobby like that.
No.
Initial hiring. And then Andy, the input he had, they leaned much more heavily toward Chicago improv sketch people.
Yeah.
Andy. Writers. Well, Andy would just, there were openings. And Andy would recommend
Tommy Blatcha.
Really funny people. Mm-hmm. Tommy Blatcha.
Brian McCann.
Brian McCann. Mm-hmm. Brian Stack.
Yep.
Yep.
Greg Cohen.
Yep.
Glazer, sure.
Yeah, just yeah. There was a big, big Chicago mafia for a while.
Yeah.
Like for only 15 years.
That is the biggest.
The mafia.
The Chicago mafia on the writing staff, and then the number of interns who have gone on to rule
right.
show business. It's right. ridiculous.
That's true.
I worked
true.
With Angela Kinsey the other day.
And yeah.
We were talking about her time. That was before.
Oh, was she an intern?
There. That was
she,
before oh, Mike no. and I were there. It was like, I think 1994, first year, maybe 93. Mm-hmm. Mindy Kaling.
Mm-hmm. Mindy Kaling.
John Krasinski. I told John Krasinski, he called me from college and said, I want to be an intern. I said, how'd you get this number? And he, I said,
I thought you were the actor.
Exactly. I set him up. I think I said, yeah. And you want to be a script intern because that's where you get to like be at the heart of the show.
Right.
The most, at least back in the day it was.
Sure.
You'd run the scripts around and deliver right. them and be there for the changes and stuff. And he did his internship. And then I, in the meantime, had left the show and come out to LA and had made a television pilot for the first time. So it was really the first time I had seen what the process of casting was and how hard it is to get hired as an actor and mm-hmm. how much of a challenge and how
right.
much they go through and the testing process in front of the networks, which is super grueling. And
right.
so I came back to New York and I was working on a show getting ready to develop the following year. And he had now graduated from college. He said, hey, I want to take you out for a cup of coffee. I was like, okay. So we went out for coffee in Rockefeller Center and he says, I want to be an actor. And I literally
like, that's
just
a bad idea.
I said, do not be
really?
An actor.
Go straight to direct.
100%. I said, you cannot this. Do that. You have to get out of the business.
Oh,
yay.
Unequivocally. I was like, it's too hard. You're a bright guy.
Yeah.
You know, do something else, which he right. did. He's
right.
a writer and a director and stuff.
Right.
But I was like, you absolutely should not be an actor. And then the next time I saw him was like 3 years later at the upfronts.
Right.
And he was in the cast of The Office. And he's like, waved to me like.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Thanks for
and
the
you
advice.
Should like that was a test
right.
and you passed.
Exactly.
You really wanted it.
Wow. That's hilarious.
Yep.
That's funny. And Ellie Kemper was a
oh yeah.
Ellie
that's right.
Kemper.
She married
Vanessa Bayer, I think.
Oh. Oh my God.
Okay.
Did you know that?
No.
No.
I think so.
She's not putting it on her resume, it sounds like.
I think she was. There's a few.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And some people became writers on the show, like Andrew Weinberg.
Yes, and Andy
and
Blitz.
Andy Blitz.
Yeah. That's right.
Interns. Yeah.
Remember the intern book?
Yes, we started it. They used to eat dinner with us every night.
Who?
The interns.
Yeah.
And then,
all of them?
Well,
in our era when you and I were there? When
yes.
I was there?
Yes. And then I remember.
Well, why did we buy dinner for all the interns?
I don't know, but we did. And then
you sure it wasn't just the dinner interns?
My memory was like one guy. It must have been the dinner interns.
The interns had gotten the food.
Okay.
Got
oh,
to stay
got
and
to eat.
Right. But then one guy ruined it by, I think he asked one of you or someone else like, hey, can I ask a question? And it's like, yeah, sure, shoot. How much do you guys make?
Oh, yes. No.
And it was like, all right. The next day it was like, no more interns.
I forgot about that. That's right. Oh, Morgan Murphy was another intern.
That's right. Morgan Murphy.
Yeah.
Very funny.
Very funny.
Mm-hmm.
I'm forgetting. There's like
we're
three
a real talent factory.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. There's more that I'm forgetting.
Yeah,
the intern book was a loose leaf binder
right.
that I think Ellie Baranczyk came up with the idea of doing, which was we had so many interns and many of them were lovely, but we could never right. remember their names. And also
yeah.
we wanted to be able to make fun of them for years after they left.
Right.
So we ended up, they had to do
that
a Polaroid shot.
That was the only reason we did it.
Yeah.
We would sit at dinner and go, oh, remember that from
one with
yeah.
the face thing?
Yeah, yeah. And everyone's like, I don't know. And that's where yeah. like, okay, we need a book.
Is it still done?
It's still done.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
I
didn't know there was a book.
Well,
were you an intern? You weren't ever an intern.
No, I wasn't.
That's why.
But I always refer to people as like, oh, the two Shugs guy. I mean, that's the only. There was a guy that always said Shug for sugar, and that's how I remember him.
Oh man!
You want one Shug or two Shugs?
Well, the guy was in
like,
a hurry.
How are you not going to remember that?
He didn't have time to say the whole word. He was on the move.
Millennials like to abbreviate.
Those millennials.
Yeah, it's true. They're saving those extra syllables to buy a house.
My son told me. there's this app you can get. It's something where it will every time the word millennial comes up on your computer, it will change it to snake people.
Oh, yeah. I did hear about that. But and then there was something, like someone had published, or maybe a journalist had published something
right.
where they forgot to They forgot to change it back.
Oh, and they published
an
article?
It that way, yeah.
Do you remember our first day, our first night? Were you going to tell that story? I think you were.
Oh,
no, because I don't remember anything. So
our first day, you had an idea for a bit. I don't remember what it was. But like Marsh McCall said, you guys go produce that. So we ended up—
On your first day?
On our first
That's
day.
Which
I, and I do remember. It was a phone call, congratulatory phone call from the president to someone, the Super Bowl winners.
Okay.
Mm. Yeah.
So was it, do we have to get Smigel to do his voice? No, we just—
Maybe. I don't remember.
But I remember editing it in that janky old NBC edit room with Chuck DeJean.
Right.
Who's this lifer editor guy who'd
been— Who would yell at us.
Who yelled at us. Ah, he was super cranky.
And if you were a new writer, he really, because he had you over the barrel, he'd be like, shut up and listen. I'm going to tell you how to edit a piece.
Right. And what I do is I'm a chef.
Right.
I have different elements, the sound and the tape, and it's like concoct a kind of a stew that's delicious with my editing.
Oh my God.
Shut up and listen. Shut up. This is an audio edit only. Don't look at the screen.
He was such a gruff but lovable bear.
Yes.
Mostly lovable.
Yes.
Very gruff.
And back then there were tape machines.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Physical tape machines. Mm-hmm.
Right.
So we had produced this bit of yours. I remember helping out. And Marsh McCall was very cool. He was the head writer. And
he was
very
writer.
Good about, like, that's a good idea. Go and do it. And
yes.
Oh, okay. And he got us involved right away.
Right, right.
Yeah, he was he was great. But that night we were staying late and eating our heavy food, and Conan had done some interviews or something or whatever after the show, and he came into the room on the writer's room. And I probably have embellished the story, but he got up. I recall him getting up on the table, mm-hmm. maybe it's just on a desk.
All right.
In that big conference room with his guitar, which he would walk around with strumming as he sure still does, singing, yes. Serenading you and me with, I can't sing, but these are the guys. They're here to ruin my show. Like that was just like,
I mean, this sounds very on brand.
Yeah. Very on brand, elaborate, well rhyming. Takedown of the two new guys who he was convinced were there to wreck his show for him.
On their first day. Yeah.
That I didn't remember that. That sounds.
You don't remember that?
No.
You blocked it out.
I did. I took it all. I'm sure I took
you
it all
were
literally.
Unconscious.
I'm like, oh God, this guy
hates
me so much. He's written a song about it. Mm-hmm. That's
yeah. For my
the rest of the staff write a song.
Right. Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah. And
workshopped
they took credit
it.
For it.
Yeah. Right. 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 And then the fantastic thing is, and I've never talked to you about this. Marsh McCall.
Yes.
Left the show in like. We had only been there like 8 months, maybe.
Yeah.
And he had only been the head writer for maybe 11 or
something like that. Yeah.
But he got a job on a sitcom and he moved to LA.
He got his job, I believe, on a show called Don't Forget Your Toothbrush.
Right. It was a brand, it was a British import.
Like a variety show. But he was dying to get back to LA because his girlfriend at the time was living here and he didn't really want to be in New York.
And he grew up in California.
And he grew up in California.
So he wanted out. So he left. And you became the head writer.
After eight months?
Yes.
That's unbelievable.
Yes. And, you know, there are all these other veteran writers there.
Oh, and I really want to hear about that.
Yes, you. But you were the guy for the job. Like, there was no question about it. And I'm wondering, what was that like? Like, were you scared at all?
Because
you're
terrified.
You're a very confident guy. But I'm... was wondering on some level were you
well yeah like, no taking I mean then go. Managing the more senior writers that
yes
that
a couple of things
yes
I always say I talk to kids from my college graduating
right.
who want to get into the business and I always say like you like it helps like I was not the best writer like there are I would say you were a funnier writer than I was Mike Sweeney and Brian Rich was
writer.
Hilarious and Ned Goldreyer was hilarious and there are all these really funny people who were writers there when I was there but Michael Gordon but there, I was good at just, I think some people were not as good, I will say, like remembering like, oh, I came up with a funny idea for a sketch and I wrote it out and I put it on your desk and you said we should like do it. And I'm like, yeah, but did you remember to call Bill Tull, the prop guy,
right.
the mailbox full of blood that we need for the sketch? Like you have to call the prop guy and get the mailbox full of blood or else the sketch doesn't work.
Right.
Oh no, I didn't remember to call. And like, so I was, I think, good at like-
at producing.
Producing
mm-hmm.
it
yes.
as well and also having- you know, a modicum maybe of emotional intelligence of like, how's Conan feeling about this? Or what's the best thing to do here? Or who would be good to put in charge of that thing?
Right.
And the other thing that I think helped me a lot was, weirdly, do you remember the boat show?
I do remember the boat show.
So we did this Circle Line. We did the show from the Circle Line, which is the boat that goes around Manhattan. Like
a tourist boat.
And we had like all these bits and stuff. And I think I kind of got tapped to be like the producer, the writer who was producing a lot of bits for that show, for that episode. And it was really intense and harrowing. And we had to race back and edit it in time.
Yes.
And there was a sound problem, I remember. And the whole thing was really an enormous, crazy undertaking.
It was.
I think because I was good at like in that situation, Jeff Ross and Conan were like, Marsh is gone and somebody's got
to. Right. Well, I remember Marsh got sick that day.
Oh, I forgot.
He was sick and he
Was he seasick from the Circle
Line? I don't know, but he
a very gentle boat ride.
He kind of literally was just like,
"Oh, that's right.
I've got to bow out."
And he had diarrhea.
You were right there and
I'd been down working and
right.
So that's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah, yeah, and you flawlessly took over and it was great.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was fate. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think that had a lot to do with it is just like
it's like an understudy situation, you know. Yeah. It's like without warning, boom.
I think it's true of like in general. Like I'm a good writer. Mm-hmm. I'm not gonna say I'm a good writer, sure. Yes. But I am also good at like you know the show running thing or whatever. Where you like if you're willing to let other smart, you know, ambitious, heart, you know, passionate people help you do something, you can actually make it good.
Right, and it makes you. It helps you
to you get
empower
to
everyone else. Exactly. exactly.
Right.
Well, it's but it is. It's a different skill. I mean, some people are really, really funny in a room or some people are brilliant writers on the page, but then they don't have that other part of their brain that's kind of keeping all the different, you know, pots on the stove.
Right.
Right.
And so that's a special person.
Just be a little bit more mediocre in the writing than other people and a little better at making the trains run on time.
But, you know, Conan would also say, he's like, oh, man, Groff just like, you know, he's the biggest ball buster ever. Like, just.
Oh, and especially for he loves to beat up on the head writer.
Yes.
So he must have found you very punchable.
Yeah.
But he said you would never given it. Like you were just unflappable. He could not get you.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, unless he was, you know,
that's a little bit
changing history.
It might be a little bit of revisionist history.
He might be revisionist.
I think you, Mike Sweeney, always had a good, like you gave it right back to him. And I never gave it right back to him. I probably had like this weird, he probably was like, I don't know. I had like a weird patrician dignity or something where I just didn't engage with him that much and maybe it freaked him out.
So he
didn't blow that much shit at me over the years.
Right.
The appropriate amount. And most of it was hilarious. So you just go with it.
Yes.
But you would actually like way more than I ever dared to would like give it right back to him, which was great. And that was your relationship. That's why you endured a long time.
I'd go through 5 or 6 year phases where I'd just be like, oh, I'm getting the crap kicked out of me.
The only time I was really mad at him, I remember, was there was some desk piece and a couple of the jokes didn't work.
Right.
I think it was verbal jokes or whatever. And he was so wound up. I came over after in the first commercial break just to check in.
Right.
Is there anything you're going to want to edit out? And he just like kind of shook his fist at me and I was like, what the fuck?
Oh my God.
And I was really mad. And I got quiet. Yeah. I think I didn't talk to him for a couple of days.
Yeah.
I think he never apologized, but I'm sure he won't remember it, but Conan, if you're listening, you hurt my feelings in 1996.
He shook his fist at you. John Groff.
He was one of those. He was always half pirate, though, and he's mad.
Yeah,
like,
That's if you called him on it, he'd be like, I was doing the pirate.
Of course.
Right.
The pugilistic pirate. Yeah. No, it is like it's kind of a marriage. Like the one or two times I would really be mad. I would be like, I've got to just go and say, you know what? I'm upset.
Right.
And part of me is like, I know I'll feel better in the short term, but he's totally like, yeah, okay, I'm sorry.
And then it becomes.
Oh my God.
Oh.
It's 20 times worse.
Oh, no.
Much worse in the day. So it's a very Pyrrhic victory.
It's such a Pyrrhic victory because he does. He has the legitimate, like, I'm really sorry. Man.
Yes.
I didn't mean that or whatever. And then, then it's just fuel.
Yeah.
But then the next
we're going to hurt Sweeney's feelings.
That sincerity will hurt you. Yeah. Yes.
It comes at a crisis.
It all gestates overnight in his sleep. And it's like, oh, I got.
I found a weakness. Yeah.
More weakness.
this is a weakness. Hilarious.
I know it's crazy that, I mean, you two are have had this very specific experience that not many people in the world ever will have, which is basically...
It's true. It's like being two of Liz Taylor's husbands.
Yeah.
You know what's weird? We all live... There's like a weird late night showrunner block on that we live, because you live literally a stone's throw from me.
Yes.
In Los Angeles. And then
I invited you to do this over the fence.
There's Tim Long. I don't think I'm giving anything away to say that Tim Long lives also a stone's throw.
Yeah, he lives.
And he's a former Letterman head writer.
Oh, wow.
Oh, is he a head writer in Letterman?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay, there you go.
I think around the time I was at some point, maybe after I was at Conan, but. Right. But literally, we live within about 50 yards.
Yes.
Of each other.
It's a mental hospital. They've convinced you that it's a neighborhood.
Neighborhood in quotes.
Speaking of late night, you mentioned something earlier, someone I hadn't thought about in ages, Neil Schatz.
Neil Schatz. Neil Schatz was our special effects guy at NBC in New York. He was a nice guy. His effects didn't always work, or there was my favorite one ever. Either they didn't work, like they were supposed to be, like, you know, blood coming out of something.
Yeah.
I keep mentioning blood, or like, you know, fanfare, like confetti supposed to go off, and it was always like, is this going to work? And
oh no!
A lot of times,
because it's so timing dependent.
It's super timing dependent, and he's nice guy, but he had been at NBC for a while, and I think he probably thought we were a bunch of idiots,
right?
But I remember there was one thing where. We're like, okay, Conan can't get injured. We just have to make sure Conan can't get injured. It was like Conan on the skateboard with some rocket, like, jet propulsion thing that he's holding. Oh, it's a fire extinguisher.
It was a fire extinguisher, and that was going to propel him backwards.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
And he had to go out through the double doors into the airlock.
And Neil had guaranteed that it would go off without a hitch.
And Conan wouldn't get hurt. And
yeah.
It was a big—
What could go wrong?
And he slammed into a wall of the studio, right?
He veered.
Oh, so it worked too well.
He veered.
Oh, yes. My God.
He veered to the left and, like, smashed into the doorway. And, you know, of course, we had to show it again in slow motion.
Yeah.
But he literally was. But there is a great moment, like, in the just as it's going out to commercial, Neil runs out to. And you just see Conan turn and just
and shakes his fist,
stare at him.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll get you.
It's the same treatment with Groff.
You and Groff,
Schatz and Groff.
Right.
That's. I mean, he would never do something like that now. I think because of so many times that it's gone wrong.
Yeah, I think they all at some point say, "I'm just not doing that stuff anymore." Yeah. There's like a famous thing where Letterman
or their insurance says it.
Right, right.
Letterman went into a big bowl of Rice Krispies. As a stunt, like, you know, back in the late night days.
Right.
He's like, whatever the bit was, he's going to go into a suit. I think he maybe had something that triggered the Rice Krispies to pop or something, whatever.
Oh, okay.
Supposedly, they sucked up all the oxygen they didn't know that it was I'm not sure I have the story exactly right, but they somehow, like, the popping or something created like a carbon dioxide thing or something, and he, like, nearly passed out and drowned in a giant bowl of Rice Krispies. Late night stunt.
Oh.
Wow.
So I could imagine.
Oh, what a way to go.
Would never do that again.
That's a good
Somebody's
way to go.
Somebody's going to write to your wolf and have the right details on that. I'm sure I got
they
about
might, yeah.
30% right.
Well, it's Dave's a big book. Listener.
Sure.
Yeah. Conan doesn't listen, but Dave does.
Does Conan not listen?
It always skips a generation.
He claims to not listen, but I like to imagine that he does.
Well, we'll see.
Just he wants you to – he's a it's a trap. He wants you to think he doesn't listen, and then you'll be summarily fired.
I never talk to him about it. That's how I handle it.
After Rodman's movie, he really can't have a problem with anybody portraying him in any way.
That's true.
Right?
You're talking about
Conan O'Brien.
Conan Can't Stop.
Can't Stop.
Yeah.
That's the name of it. Mm-hmm. Rodman Flender.
Documentary.
I was the director. Yeah. About the tour back in 2010.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It
he's
was
pretty.
Brutally honest.
It is brutally honest.
Yeah.
It is brutally honest. Yeah. 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 That was, I was there the whole time. It was, that was a long slog. It was fun. It was exciting fun doing shows. All those shows. Mm-hmm. But
that was a weird.
But there's a lot of work
personal
too.
Personal time.
Right, right, right. We were writing monologue jokes every day for each city. So Matt O'Brien went on the trip too.
Oh, yeah.
And it was
And a lot of the other writers wrote the sketches for the show because it was kind of like a variety show. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was intense. There were times when the camera would be in, like Rodman would be in the room with the camera, and I just started leaving the room because it was just.
Well, yeah, I'm sure when the camera's there, it's a little different.
Yeah, yeah, yes.
Justin, and so good. Thousands of spring deals at your Nordstrom Rack store. Save big today on new arrivals from Kate Spade New York, Nike, Sam Edelman, Free People, and Madewell, starting at only $30. Great brands and great prices on dresses, denim, sandals, designer bags, and more. So rack your look and get first dibs on spring styles you want now from just $30 at your Nordstrom Rack store. What will you find?
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Oh, so when you left,
yes.
You left, right?
How long were you the head writer?
I started, I think, in September of 2000, and I left.
Yeah, in 95, and you left 95. In September 2000.
Sorry, thank you, yes. Mm. I started September 95 and left right. Around September 2000, 5 years.
And right after Andy left. Andy had left in May of 2000. Yeah.
That's right. So there was a few months. I saw a glimpse of that particular future.
And you knew that was time to jump ship.
I did love that.
Andy's great. That was a good experience, though, I think, for Conan.
Yes.
Just learning to host a show on his own without
100%.
Having a sidekick. Mm-hmm. So that was a good experience.
It was a whole other – that worked out kind of great in a way because he had those years, build a different set of muscles, and then was able to reincorporate Andy. I agree with that.
But then you and Conan created a show for Andy.
Oh, we did.
Yeah.
That was so fun.
Andy Barker.
It's called Andy Barker PI. Mm-hmm. And Conan had this idea that he said it was a little bit based on Dan Gurr in a way. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah. He. I don't know Dan all that well. Dan's a writer at Conan.
Yeah.
Late night after I was there.
Yeah.
Dan's been on the podcast.
And he's been on.
And he's now going to see you guys for
super successful.
Ripping off his life story.
He's also showrunner. Yeah.
Showrunner.
That's good.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Andy Richter played Andy Barker PI, who was a private investigator, who had fallen into that trade. He was an accountant who was just. Starts to hang out his own shingle to become his own little firm, and business is really slow. And then one day this mysterious Russian woman shows up and tries to hire him. And it turns out as a private detective, and it turns out that his old office was this detective's office from years ago.
Who retired.
So he goes and finds the old guy and reunites with him a little bit. And then Tony Hale played the guy who, this is how long ago this was, the video store owner downstairs.
Yeah.
It was in this little shopping mall complex. Conan got this idea by wondering, like, who are the accountants or the life insurance salesman or the dentist on the second floor of like a two-story shopping complex off the freeway in Connecticut near his country house. And it's like, I wonder what those people are like. And the idea of this sort of super earnest person who's like superpower almost is his goodness and decency and kind of straight shooteriness was something that he had felt like Dan kind of had some of that. I don't know Dan all that well, but this kind of like, okay, well, I think that's a good idea. I'm going to figure out how to do that. You know, oh. kind of can do like
yeah, thing. I could see that. Yeah.
So he was like, and I had met Dan a few times and I was like, I got tracks.
Yeah.
But then when we were starting to like figure out who could play it, we kind of looked at each other and were like, oh, we have to see if Andy Richter
it's will do perfect.
This. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. And Dan Gore turned it down.
Dan Gore turned it down. yeah. So NBC approved and we got to make just I think 6 episodes. It's smaller and smaller numbers of episodes that I get to do. The first thing I did got ordered for 7 episodes and then 6. So
And Tony Hale, that's like
it was
amazing. I know.
He was coming off of Arrested. I think Andy had done an episode of Arrested, so he knew
him. He did.
Oh, had he done Arrested already?
He played triplets or something?
And they were maybe quintuplets even. Quintuplets. It was like
I thought it was before Arrested Development.
No.
Okay.
I made a show in 2002 with Jason Bateman called The Jake Effect for NBC right before he got Arrested Development.
Oh,
and
wow.
that went 7 episodes.
Okay.
And then I made Andy Barker PI with Tony Hale right after Arrested
Development.
Oh, wow. So I am kind of a failure bookend for Arrested Development stars.
Did you?
On their way to other things, because then, of course, Tony went into Veep a few years after that.
Right.
Has won multiple Emmys.
Mm-hmm. Jason Bateman won an Emmy for director.
He did.
Oh.
Did you tell him not to go into directing?
That's hilarious. I should have.
Yeah.
So yeah, we got to write that show. It was a really lovely little show, and we got to cast some fun. Clea Lewis was.
Did Conan contribute in the writing as well?
He contributed in the original concept, and then he pitched story ideas, and then he pitched a lot of, gave me tons of notes on the pilot. He came out for the table read of the pilot, and I remember I had like just my writer friends helping me punch up the pilot, which you do after we did a table read, and we went back to somebody's office at Universal, and we're going to...
Got some pizza,
the whole thing. We're going to rewrite it. And Conan came and stayed. He had like a busy schedule because this is right before The Tonight Show, So he was starting to get really busy and everything. And he, I remember him lying on the floor of this office and I felt a little bit like he's like, effortlessly going to prove that he was funnier than everybody in the room. Which there was one joke that he pitched where like we're trying to come up with a line for I think Tony Hale's character to remember what this old detective had been like when he used to live there, when he used to have his offices there. And Conan says pitch for Tony's character like, he's kind of a weird guy, crazy temper. I once saw him throw a can of peaches at a dog. I was like, well, and that went into the script and is in the pilot because it's like a very Conan O'Brien.
Yeah, good specifics.
Yeah. Can of peaches, but a dog.
Showing off.
Yeah.
That's funny.
But he helped out and then he was, but it went away so quickly. Mm. We did 6 episodes.
Now that's like a whole British series.
I know. That would be successful, a little Netflix.
Yeah. BBC show.
Yeah.
Instead of 22 episodes.
I know.
How is that?
I've done 24 episodes of Black-ish.
Oh, wow.
For those first few years.
Really?
Yeah. Still, I think that's probably what they'll do again this year. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I can't imagine that.
I remember when I was developing a show and I hadn't had a chance to pitch it yet. And then somebody at NBC, this is around 2002, said, Carrie Burke, the executive at NBC, I was in her offices to say hello. I was in from New York and she had just hung up the phone. She said, hi, welcome. I just got off the phone with Rupert Everett and he wants to do a show for NBC and I want you to write it. And I was like, wait, what? Okay. Remember Rupert Everett from My Best Friend's
Wife? Yeah.
Okay. So I had to like shelve what I was developing. It's the thing that actually became that show with Jason Bateman. And chase this Rupert Everett project. And it turns out he had a whole idea and it wasn't a great idea. And I pitched a different idea.
Right.
He pitched a fish in water story, which was like, it was the British ambassador. I'm a British guy who gets named the British ambassador and I'm inept. Huh. I'm like, but that's the British ambassador of the United States. Like, what if you were a British guy who gets elected to the US Senate or something? That would be a fish out of water. Could we do that? Whatever. It was all terrible.
Right.
My idea was sucked too. But anyway, I remember having this big meet and greet with him. I remember having this meeting with him the morning to pitch my take on the whole thing. And he had just come over from NBC first time he'd been in the States since they bought this idea or this idea to do the show. And he looked, we were meeting at a bungalow over at Universal. Right. And he walks in, he's kind of shell-shocked. And he's like, so I was just meeting our friends at NBC. I'm like, yeah, how'd it go? He goes, good. Apparently the goal is to make 100 of these episodes. I was like, yeah. He goes, 100? I thought we would do 6 or 7 and then take some time. He'd seen like The Office.
Have a vacation.
Maybe do a special Christmas episode.
Right.
It's like, I was like, yeah, man, this is America. Yeah. We're going to make, everybody's going to get rich.
Yeah.
We're going to make a lot of episodes.
Capitalist.
No time off.
No time off.
No Euro vacations.
We're going to make 100 forgettable episodes of this show.
And you still won't have insurance.
I love that.
Yeah, that's really funny. So yeah,
turned and headed straight to the airport. That's I imagine they still do that, where they take talented writers and talent and just try to throw them together on things.
Yeah,
and
see, I mean, it's definitely how the business works. I like always like the kind of more organic thing, like write for somebody you've known for longer. Mm-hmm. Like the Always Sunny guys is a perfect example of like they kind of all knew each other and then they end up knowing each other's rhythms and they create this hilarious world, and it's a thing that endures.
I think it's more unique. It's got a unique voice.
Or Larry David and Jerry Seinfeld, or you know, you people. But that being said, like, you know, there's definitely arranged marriages that.
Right.
Can work out really well.
Right.
Open to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
For sure.
It's
I don't think Kenya Barris and Anthony Anderson really knew each other that much before Black-ish, but then they sat down and talked about it and said, like, this is you know, I relate to what your situation is as a father and
right.
a black guy growing up in LA, and I could tell a version of that story and let's do it. And, you know, they hit it off. Or Kenya and I'd never met Kenya before.
Right.
We ended up working together.
Yeah. A long time.
For a long time. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, so Anthony was. Already,
Anthony's a producer on that show, an executive producer. So I think Kenya had the idea. It's his life, basically. But then when he sat down with Anthony, Anthony was like, oh my God, I know exactly what you're talking about. I could play that. And then they took it out together.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, that's nice.
It's a great show, too. And
because you can tell sometimes when it's like, oh, maybe a celebrity that's looking for a project found something, it's sort of a stretch.
Yeah.
But they wanted a vehicle for themselves. And
But I think that for everyone where you feel like it's a stretch, there's probably ones that were just as arranged where it just worked, you know,
and
maybe people, especially with like fresh faces that have like, you know, when you're casting 25-year-olds and they don't have that much, you know, like John Krasinski is a perfect example. Mm-hmm. Like Greg Daniels didn't have any relationship with John Krasinski or, you know, Jenna Fischer or whatever, but they just, you know, peopled that world and it clicks, you know?
Yeah. So. Yeah. It's cool.
Yeah.
Are you in the middle of casting now for your
No, I just sold
mixed-ish?
A show on Friday to NBC.
Oh, my God.
Congratulations.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, a pilot idea.
Let's go spend that money.
But I have to write it now, so I'm not casting.
Oh, mistake. You should never have pitched it.
Nightmare.
What were you thinking?
It's so bad.
What's the time frame for that? How much time
do you have? I'm a teeny bit on the later side of selling for, this is a network, it's for ABC, so, but it's not too late, but you know, we'll have to get an outline together in a few weeks and then story area. We already kind of pitched the idea for the pilot story, but an outline for that. And then, you know, they usually want to see a script before Christmas.
Wow. Yeah.
Although I usually end up handing it after Christmas, but you can do, but
right.
You know,
and when you say we, do you have
I'm writing it with someone. Yeah.
Oh, good.
Writing alone is so hard and
it's
so not actually how you make good half hour television. I think it's so much of a group effort that it's always like this emphasis on like, what's your idea and what's your idea. And I was like, you know what? I don't want to do that this year. So I'm working with a woman named Elena Crivello, who's the writer I worked with. I was supervising a pilot of hers 5 years ago that ended up not going, but I really liked her. I just remembered like, oh, she'd be somebody, let's see what she's doing this development season. So I called her up and we got together and she liked an area that I was thinking about and she added a ton to it. And so we're writing it together.
Well, that's great.
That's really cool. Yeah.
When you have someone to write with that, where you just hit it off,
it's so much.
It's fun. My God.
It's fun. And then it just goes fast.
It goes so much faster. Part of what's fun about being funny is making somebody else laugh. So if like you're sitting there writing with somebody and you make them laugh or they make you laugh, it's just so much more. And
yes.
Then somebody's usually going to have a
better joke than you or be inspired by your good joke to write a great joke. So it's definitely better. Right. Like the best comedy shows, the best half hours are like, they're generally not one person. I mean, there's cool. I mean, there's the Phoebe Waller-Bridges of the world.
Right.
I
don't know when, and those there's not very many of them.
No.
Not very many of them. And those tend to be, you know, super personal. And
there was only two seasons.
Dramatic, maybe, at times.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, there's not one. When you see written by on an episode of The Simpsons, that's 25 people.
Yeah. Yes.
Contributing jokes. You just need somebody who can shepherd it.
Put it on paper. It,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
And then you need a showrunner who can make sure that, you know, the show still has a unique voice and something to say, and it doesn't feel like just a joke fest.
Right.
Yeah.
Which can happen.
That is, oh, what were you going to say?
No. I was just going to say, I mean, did you have a sense when you were working at Conan that you wanted to go into sitcoms, or was that?
I've been pretty good about, like, every time I get to a thing, being appreciative of what that is. And I remember, I'm sure you felt this too, walking into that building in 30 Rock, walking into 30 Rock, Rockefeller Center, and just going like, I can't believe I'm getting to go in and work in this building where Steve Allen and many decades of Saturday Night Live and Letterman
Matt
and
Lauer.
Ronan and Matt Lauer. I just like Live at Five with Chuck Scarborough and Sue Simmons. We're the greats. Yeah. Just hung their shingles and strutted their stuff. But I was like always like definitely appreciative of those moments while you're there. So I stayed at Conan like, you know, I stayed at 5 years and I it was the heyday of like, oh, come out to L.A. and make a TV show.
Right.
But I resisted and I liked being in New York. But once I started to – I will say once I got the opportunity to write in a somewhat longer form – I took to it and thought, oh, I can actually have an emotional connection between characters as opposed to like, how do we
killing them off at the end?
Exactly. Having somebody run on in running shorts and shoot the bear, you know, the master, whatever.
In under 2.5 minutes.
Exactly. Like just like that. But I love that discipline of Conan, especially in those years where it was like, what's the funniest pure shot of weird thing that we can come up with? You know, the FedEx Pope or, you know, the masturbating bear.
Right.
You know. I love that you referenced FedEx Pope.
FedEx Pope.
Yes.
It's canon.
Still, you know what bit I remember? I think this was a Michael Gordon bit where, it was the Conan's, where Andy would grant Conan his birthday wishes.
Like, yes.
I don't know if he created the bit, but I think it was a Michael Gordon pitch where, Conan says to Andy, Andy says, I'll grant you birthday wishes. And one of them was, Conan's like, well, I'd like my father to tell me he loves me.
Oh, right.
And Andy goes, well, I called your father up and he wouldn't agree to do that. But we got an actor named Howard Laniato to come out. And he's like this distinguished looking New York theater actor comes out and comes up behind the desk of Conan and looks Conan in the eye. And he goes, I can't.
He actually starts.
Yay.
Conan, I want to tell you that.
And you think it's really going to be emotional.
Yeah.
I can't do it.
I can't.
So the actor paid to say I love you.
It's great.
Can't do it. But I loved coming up with and being part of that world where you're just coming up with those like discreet, hilarious moments of stuff. But then when I actually switched to half hours, it's like, oh, I could have this could actually be about thing. And then Blackish for the last 5 years has been like, oh my God, you can actually really talk about stuff maybe and have this a show that means something in the culture. And even though nobody watches network television anymore.
Right.
And the numbers are
I think
tragic.
That's one of the only ones that people watch.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. But even the numbers on like, it's hilarious how
Oh,
much,
really?
Well, I mean, yeah.
I
mean, I think people watch it.
Ratings.
People watch it over time, but like the overnight ratings, which even 5 or 6 years ago was still a thing, like it's just not.
It's shocking.
It's shocking.
Yeah.
They're talking about the Nielsen ratings, and they still have people with boxes. They have Nielsen houses still where, meanwhile,
but
everything
that's such
is
a
digitized.
Specific demographic of people,
it is.
Probably.
People who show up at Tuesday at 9 to watch their show.
Right. It just seems so archaic, especially now where, you know, we could call down to our web team and ask how many people are – you know, watched our videos
clicks.
In Portugal, and they'll give you the exact number.
Yeah. So you just sold this pilot.
Yes.
That's incredible. At this point, do you go in every pitch season with something? I mean, do you sort of set that as a goal? like I'm gonna pitch something.
It depends on whether I'm developing that year or not. Yeah. So this is a year I decided to develop. So mm-hmm. I was on Blackish during the summer for a couple of days a week while I was starting to like think of some ideas, and then I switched over to Mixdish for a couple of days a week instead. But meanwhile, thinking of different ideas. So this is a year that I sort of say, oh, this is a year I'll try to develop and sell something. And
yeah.
I'm also,
we need a new gazebo.
Exactly. You know, I can vouch for that as a neighbor.
Well, you go and it's pitch season for network. But the nice thing is that I'm actually, you know, in have a deal with ABC Studios where like I can take things out, but they don't totally say that I have to just sell to the ABC network, because they're also now trying to sell to Hulu and FX and Disney Plus. So there's a variety.
Because ABC Studios could produce something for one of those other
places, especially in the wake of that merger, that Disney
Fox
merger. Oh, there's supposedly more avenues to sell things.
Oh, so that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's certainly avenues.
And it's also like people are just watching, you know, your kids don't know where they see things. They just find out about a show, right? And so the more that mentality seeps over to creators, I think you can sort of hopefully find the platform that makes the most sense for a show.
Mm-hmm. Right.
As opposed to just trying to come up with a network show. That being said, I kind of like network television. It's been good to me. And I like the somewhat bigger, broader platform of it. Mm-hmm. And I think because you have to, there's still content restrictions in terms of like language and stuff. You have to be, I mean, I still think it's changed, but for a long time, even with cable and the beginnings of streaming, it still felt like the funniest shows were 30 Rock and The Office and Parks and Recreation.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, you know,
the other shows like just add sex, and that's really it.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I think there's still The Good Place, which
I was going to say, so
yeah,
Good Place is another example.
And Proud of Blackish. And,
right.
And you know, Modern Family and The New Girl, a lot of good shows. But I do think that it's started to get now where like, oh, the streaming things are also really funny, too.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, and it's arresting, too, like something like Fleabag or.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you ever had to go to having said that, you like the restrictions. Have you ever had to go to the mat still with where you felt like they were not allowing stuff?
Yeah.
Or
too
you wanted to push
something.
Push the envelope a little bit.
I've been at ABC for a long time, and it's been interesting to see their evolution, because they really were the Disney owned network for a long, long time. I did a show called Happy Endings for a few seasons.
Right.
And that was sort of young people and a lot of sex jokes and stuff. And it was definitely, we had to get into a lot of arguments there, and sometimes on Blackish too. But it's been interesting to see ABC slowly, I think, realize that without really putting themselves in a tricky position, they have to do something to make sure people still feel like connected to these shows in a world where they can see content that feels realer or grittier or more authentic.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that's how I think they let Blackish do some of the things topically in terms of the topics that we took on.
Right.
Or maybe some of the language restrictions or content restrictions that they've eased up on a little bit, just to kind of make it not so
just
squeaky clean.
Or
just because people can get anything they want anytime. So,
Well, there's that big controversy on Blackish with that one. Were you there during all that?
That was a year, 2 years ago that I was developing also. So I wasn't running the show that season, but I was around.
Yes.
Yeah, that was complicated.
Right.
I'm not really supposed to talk about it.
I understand.
But it was like, it was, I think, a series of misunderstandings and things that weren't handled great by some things.
Right.
We'll leave it at that.
Yeah. We will leave it at that.
Yeah.
You worked with Adam Pop. Is it Pally or Polly?
Yeah. Adam Pally. Happy Endings.
On Happy Endings. I think he's really
so funny.
I mean,
that cast was ridiculous.
The cast was great.
It was like the new Friends.
Damon Wayans Jr., yeah. Casey Wilson, Eliza Coop, Zach Knighton, Alicia Cuthbert, and Adam Pally. And
they're
all lovely and super funny.
Mm-hmm.
I love that show.
That must have been fun to do.
Oh, it was super fun. It was.
And it was three seasons.
Were you there from the beginning?
Yeah. I didn't create it. David Casp created it, but I came on after it got picked up and got to help him run it. And I ran it. And then we brought on Josh Pycelle and Gail Lerner for a couple seasons, helped us run it. And it was a great experience. It was, but I used to tell this story. David Casp was kind of a film writer before, and he'd never run a TV show. And he didn't really like writing with other people when I first met him. Uh-huh. It was hard for him, and he was not, the show wasn't particularly jokey, his original script. Uh-huh. And then I said, like, well, you know what? We have some scenes to work on. Why don't you invite a couple of funny friends? And I'll invite some funny people. So I invited like 3 or 4 funny writers, and he invited his friends, Matthew and Daniel Libin, who are very funny. And all of a sudden, he saw this room of people like make this thing so funny. And he went from a guy like, I don't know if I want it to be too jokey, and to like, we stuffed that show with jokes every
JPM
15 seconds.
Did he have an immediate epiphany? Was he just like,
he also, I think he enjoyed being in a room.
Yeah.
He saw that it was more fun. And then we also had really fun. We like had really good casting. And I think you also know, like, oh, any of those people can just deliver a huge joke.
Right. Yeah.
So
would they improvise a bit?
Yes. Adam improvised the most.
Yeah.
Sometimes at the least opportune times. Like the TCA's first season, he said some stuff. The TCA's are the Television Critics Association.
Right.
Yeah. Said,
so you do a panel?
You do a panel. And on a panel, he said something like obnoxious that made like the television reporter from like the Utah paper go like, this guy's an asshole, basically. Right. So, but
and we
got past it.
But that it was great press.
It was great press. But he would improvise a lot. And then all of them did Casey a lot. And Damon Wayans would improvise and be hilarious. And you could always use him and Eliza Coop especially were great together at the ends of scenes. But also Damon was really cool because he would think of something really funny that he could say and then go, wait, that might be funnier if Zach Knighton said it.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, that's cool.
Oh, my God.
That is very generous. Yeah. Very generous. And also someone who's confident about their own talent that they're like, you know what, I'm going to spread it around.
Yeah, he was great.
That's great. Wow. That's wonderful.
Wow. Yeah, you worked on some really great ensembles.
Yeah, that was fun. I got to work at How I Met Your Mother for a couple of seasons, too.
Oh, cool.
That was cool, yeah. Another great ensemble.
Yeah.
Got to be there during Britney Spears kind of coming out of her strange thing that she was in where she had shaved her head.
Yeah.
She came.
Right.
The umbrella.
Yeah. So we used her as a guest star, which was.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Strange. You know,
taking advantage of someone's fragile situation. I applaud it. I think it's great. Look, you do what you got to do, guys. It's showbiz.
Is there anything creatively that you still want to do or that's kind of in the back of your mind that like another form or, I don't know, live show or movie or, I don't know.
Say no.
That's, or maybe you've done it all. You've,
no,
you
I would like to do a really, I would love to do a cool streaming show where you did 10 episodes and made them great. Because I have been in network television for a long time. And even though a couple of the things I've made had short orders.
Right.
In general, it's been a lot of 22, 24 episodes, which is fantastic and wonderful. But it would be nice to just go like, this is only 8 episodes and it's not because it sucked and was canceled. It's because that's all it was ever supposed to be for season one. Mm-hmm. And that would be really neat, I think, to like just
really tell a story over that.
Tell a story over that and really dig in and make them great.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking forward to trying to do that at some point.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you think you can do that with this idea you just pitched, or
ABC Network bought it, so theoretically, the networks I think
so they want 100 episodes.
Right. I think that they are moving more to like the realization that they need to not just do 24 episodes and expect people to show up and maybe have smaller windows.
Batches,
Like I think Good Place has been smaller batches for the last little bit, and you know. That seems to work for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they decided to end the show.
Exactly. It had an end seasons. Time. It wasn't about like, let's make 130 of these. It was like, let's tell
let's
our
go
story.
Go out on top. Yeah.
For sure.
Let's not wait for people to get sick of us.
That's right.
That's what we're doing.
Yeah.
I feel it.
Yeah. We're almost, our season of this podcast is almost up.
Yes.
How many of these have you done?
34. This is 34.
Episode 34?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Who's the worst guest? Can you say?
I was on the
Conan has not been a guest?
He was on the first show.
He was on the first show.
Yeah.
He hasn't been back.
Blessing. Yeah.
And then it's like we go on and, you know, we were on the travel show with him. We're like, we're in Greenland for 2.5 days. And, you know, people are like, grab Conan and have him do
try to do an episode.
Yeah. And, you know, we're... all exhausted.
Those were cool.
Yes.
Greenland was awesome.
Yeah, that was surreal. I don't feel like
very exotic to me.
Yes. I almost don't feel like when we were editing it, I was like, oh, we were there.
How many writers go on the travel shows?
There's three of us.
Yeah. Me, yeah. Jesse, and Jose Arroyo.
Uh-huh.
Do you know Jose?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know.
And Conan, of course.
Conan O'Brien.
He gets a writing credit.
And Jeff Roscoe's.
Yeah.
And Jason Shalemi is fantastic.
He's fantastic. He's
the field producer.
Oh, yeah. He was an intern, right? And
He was.
Yeah.
And so was Schlansky.
Mm-hmm. Jordan Schlansky.
That's right.
Yeah. Yes.
Our most famous intern, probably. Mm-hmm.
Probably. Him and Mindy Kaling.
Was he, when did he start appearing as talent on the show? Was that when you were there?
I would never have allowed that.
Okay.
It's true. You didn't. Yay. That is one of your claims to fame.
Do you know my Jordan Schlansky story?
Oh, no. I'd love to hear it.
Besides many things, besides just knowing him over the years, I was in New Zealand New Year's Eve 2012 going into 2013, I think.
Right.
With my wife and kids at this remote lodge on the South Island near like a sheep herding lodge.
Cool.
Basically that had been turned into like a nice place to hang out. Grasmere Lodge. And nice it's plug. Sitting, going to dinner on New Year's Eve. They had dinner for everybody. And then we were going to have a little New Year's Eve celebration at this lodge. And I walk into the bar right before dinner to have little draft of scotch and standing 10 feet away from me. Other side of the world. That's Jordan Schlansky.
Right.
And we just looked
and
at
you were
each
there
other.
To get away from work and unwind.
Exactly. But it was cool. It was one of those moments.
By himself?
He was with a girl.
Okay.
A woman. Excuse me. It was that moment, though. I have to give him credit because I was like, Jordan, I'm glad you are here at the
right.
I wouldn't have missed it. He didn't miss it.
Yeah. Right. Good.
Of course. That sounds right.
I'm here as you instructed.
Oh, that's insane.
You know,
it was so weird.
Other people, Conan ran into him.
Oh, yeah. Wait, I'm starting to wonder if this is even an accident.
I don't know. I think Jordan is so just out of the country so often that odds are people we know are going to run into him all the time.
He somehow has a lot of disposable income.
Yeah. We don't, no one, still a total mystery.
Yeah.
So how did you end up spending the night with him?
I think it was one of those ones where we were leaving the next morning and he was leaving the next morning. So I think it was like a big, you know, everybody in the lodge was getting the dinner.
Auld Lang Syne.
And so I rang in New Year's with Schlansky.
And then your kids a day later are like, where's Uncle Jordan? Please, children. Knock that off.
He taught us how to make a quality espresso.
All right.
Well, Jonathan Groff, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mike Sweeney.
It's great seeing you.
I'm going to say, I think you're my favorite Jonathan Groff.
Oh, that is so nice.
Of course, having not met the other one. No, that's true.
He's lovely. I met him and he was wearing a bike helmet.
Oh. At an event.
It was after the Hamilton and he was wearing a bike helmet. And I think it was he's very nice.
Yeah.
But I think it was his way of saying like, I'm not going to talk
to you. Oh, I need to go.
Because I have a bike helmet on and I've got to go.
He didn't even ride a bike there.
I know.
Nope.
He always has one.
Yeah.
His assistant carries it at all times so he can throw it on.
Thank you guys.
Thank you so much, Jonathan.
Well, that was Jonathan Groff.
Yes, it was great to see my neighbor again.
Yeah, you guys
in a recording
have a good
studio.
Chemistry.
Yes.
I see what it takes to be a head writer.
Finally.
Conan.
Yes, once you saw Jonathan, it made sense.
Well, we mentioned this, but we only have two more episodes after this in our season. So we want to get back to the listener questions.
We love listener questions.
We do. And this might be your last chance to ask us.
Yeah. So please send them in. Anything.
Yeah. Really, anything. It could just be, I mean, we'll give advice about
any topic.
Dealing with your in-laws.
Yep.
So send
the
those.
Senate here, the congressional hearings, anything I have questions about.
And the email is insideconanpod@gmail.com. We're not going to give you the phone number because no one's calling us. People just we all prefer to email these days anyway.
Yeah,
no one makes phone calls anymore. Send us a message. We'll answer it on one of the next couple episodes.
Right.
And we'll come up with some really good guests for these last two.
Or if you run into us on the street, ask us in person.
That's
and
true.
We'll answer them on the podcast as well.
We'll give you Sweeney's address mm-hmm. at the end of the show.
Yes.
But we'll see you next week.
Yes. Talk to you soon.
We like you. Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast, is hosted by Mike Sweeney and me, Jesse Gaskell.
Produced by Kevin Bartelt.
Engineered by Will Becton.
Mixed by Ryan Connor.
Supervising producer is Aaron Blaird.
Associate producer, Jen Samples. Executive produced by Adam Sachs and Jeff Ross. Jeff Ross at Team Coco. And Colin Anderson and Chris Bannon at Earwolf.
Thanks to Jimmy Vivino for our theme music and interstitials.
You can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts.
And of course, please subscribe and tell a friend to listen to Inside Conan on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or whatever platform you like best.
Ta-da!
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Earwolf.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.